heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
The war has had a toll, for sure. Let's do some math real quickly here. This conflict has left 2,400 approximately U.S. service members dead, more than 20,000 wounded, many have lost limbs and serious life altercations, more than 145,000 people in all, including that includes now those numbers, Afghan military, police, and civilians have died from this. And when you start to add all those numbers up and all the wounded, it's a hell of a payback, I guess. Now, some people would say from the 3,000 plus that were murdered at 9/11 here. But 9/11, as I think you'll all agree with me, was a stain on the soul of America. It was a stain. It was more than just the fact that 3,000 people died, if that wasn't bad enough, and it was. People were jumping out of windows, you remember. But it was a scar. Do you understand what I mean by scar? Sometimes there's something that hits the fabric of our country. And that's why it became so symbolic to see this bin Laden dude search down at the ends of the earth, wherever the hell he was. Of course, he ended up being in a compound not too far from the center of hell. And they found him there, clearly. But you get the point of what I mean. And when you hit that soul of America, there's a payback, people. There's a payback. So the numbers I give you are real, but there's a payback for all of this, and that was the payback. Now, these numbers continue to escalate. The numbers I just gave you, they're already more than, I mean, it's just every day that the toll increases here. The cost of, like, dollars, more than $740 billion, and it's far more than that. That keeps jumping up every day as well. It's a very expensive proposition. We're just speaking of Afghanistan in real dollars here, you know. So, you know, has all this death and maiming and money been justified for the results? Some people would ask. It's a fair question. Have to bite one's head off to ask the question at least, right? And then let's discuss that if it was worth it. But more so than that, there's another discussion, people, and that is, where do we go from here? And it plays into this, because what have we accomplished is one thing, but where do we go from here? Because as you've been seeing some of the recent developments here, if we abandon Afghanistan, if we leave it, as many have done prior, where are we? Have we accomplished anything in a concrete way, or is the jury out, of course? Well, that argument becomes front and center when we start to talk about the Taliban. And you've seen the recent talks, that secret talks now. There was really no publicity about this. So everybody was stunned. And of course, the media was a bit stunned because they didn't know a lot of this. But there were talks that were scheduled for Camp David. This is very controversial now, people, because to have Taliban leaders at Camp David around the time of September, you do the math real quick and you tell me that's, some people might say that's a good thing, but I think most people would say probably not a good thing. Now, of course, if it had all worked out well, and if the Taliban had a word you could trust, and if they did everything they were going to say they did or would do, and if there was a real deal that came together, and if Satan was only pretend and the fairy godmother was real, we'd be in good shape now, people, wouldn't we, huh? Yeah, exactly. So these talks were scheduled for Camp David, and the Taliban now, when President Trump pulled the talks down and put the message out on Twitter and said the talks are dead, that the Taliban comes back and they say that the United States will regret this decision to call off the talks. This was the hope of ending supposedly this 18-year-old Afghan war, people. But there's a lot more to this. And now you bring in the complication of the developments this week that you see that has happened when President Trump fired National Security Advisor John Bolton. So now you might ask the question, how does that fit into the puzzle? And why was the timing of that right now? Well, the president tweeted out and said, "I disagreed strongly with many of his suggestions." Well, friends, you may say what you want to say, but that's reason enough to fire the national security advisor. Quite frankly, I'm surprised he ever hired him to begin with. Not the fact that he's a hawk or not a hawk or a dove or anything else. That's not even it. But again, back to the ideology of what the man believes. Does it fit into the Trump doctrine? I'm not so sure that it ever did. But that's just my quick opinion. We'll find out from a couple of experts in a moment what they really think, huh? You know? So now Bolton is tossed out and interesting. Now that's more frenzy for the media people. So they'll all be going crazy here in the days and weeks ahead. The Trump, you know, administration's falling apart and the sky is falling and these people don't know what they're doing and he fired that. Well, the point is these people work at the behest of the president. If the president doesn't like your opinions, the door will swing fast and hit you in the ass, won't it now? I don't care what president you are, what administration or what time cycle, people. That's the way it works in the real world. The president loses faith with you, you're gone. The door will hit you in the ass. You're out of here, man. Done. That's the way it works. So Bolton's history now, right? He'll go back to being a commentator somewhere, I'm sure, on some news channel or what have you. It's what typically happens. And then there were reports now that came out were saying that, you know, that there was a disagreement over this Camp David potential meeting. In fact, there were further reports that said Vice President Mike Pence and National Security Advisor John Bolton strongly opposed this initial decision to hold the meetings with the Taliban leaders at Camp David. President Trump tweeted out, said that story is false. Said not accurate. More fake news potentially, I don't know. Now, some would say the timing on all this is very suspect. The timing of why you would plan any kind of a meeting with the Taliban at Camp David is an insult to some people. Other people might say it's a good thing. If the result comes out the way you want the result, people, right? Obviously. So that's the conversation. That's the question we need to have today to you. But is Afghanistan here? And the timing of that. We've got a multifaceted expert group here today I want to bring on here, including Colonel Jim Warshuk, Ilana Friedman, and I've asked our Arnetta Notkin, our producer and esteemed colleague here, to join us as well, because she has some very strong opinions, and I'd like them to be heard as well. I want to start here and bring on Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst. She's a political commentator and host here at America Out Loud. Let me just mention quickly, too, her newest book. She's a prolific author. Her latest book, Hamas, The Story of Islamic Jihad on Israel's Front Lines, is on Amazon and on the America Out Loud bookstore. She's a columnist, commentator, and a brilliant voice here on the platform. Ilana, so I guess the question is, let me ask you right up front, the first thing, Camp David, was it a good thing to have planned this gathering, this potential meeting with the Taliban in September? Was it a positive? Could it have been positive? Was it positive? Was the strategy right?
I think the strategy was brilliant, but I don't think that these talks would have created any opportunity for movement forward with the Taliban.
Because
the Taliban come from a culture that is about 3,000 years old, and they have not really moved from where they were 3,000 years ago. They're not modern. They don't think the way we do. They don't want the same things that we do for their lives. They live in a very primitive way, and they're very happy with it. The way they treat women and children is abhorrent to us, but we're not going to change that.
And they also want us dead.
And yes, of course they want us dead, because what we have done, and we've done it for decades, maybe a century or more, that in our foreign policy, we make the assumption that the people that we're trying to deal with want exactly what we want. Mm-hmm. And that isn't the case. The people around the world have their own cultures, their own way of living. They don't need a TV in every room. They don't need a car in every garage. They don't need to send their kids to the best schools. They have another way of living, which is very foreign to us, and we don't respect that. We assume that they want democracy, that they want freedom. They don't. And so I don't think that our time in Afghanistan has been very productive. There was a short time where they had a government that gave some freedom to women and allowed them to go to school and allowed them to have jobs and so forth. It didn't last very long, and it is under attack every day. This is not the way the ruling class, which is the Taliban, and the Afghan culture wants to live.
I so applaud you for pulling out the piece. Nobody ever says what you say, and I just love it because I say it myself, in that America, we have a tendency to push our form of, as you say, freedom, democracy, our republic, our values, our core values. We tend to push them. I agree with that theory. And we push them around the world like it's a pop cultural phenomenon that everybody wants our form of lifestyle. We're not really truly respecting people's lives and their values and their style, I think. And so I would agree with you, dear. I've been critical of our leaders for some time because of that. And that's now when we get into a lot of this nation building and we get into this forcing our values across the spectrum here. Let me ask you straight out this, and then I want to bring on Colonel Warshak here. When I give you the numbers of what those numbers are of the amount of people that have died, and I said more than 2,400 dead and 20,000 wounded and 145,000 in total, and of course we'll be $1 trillion, I'm sure, before we'll probably never leave there. We'll talk about that today as well. Would you say that the investment over these past 18 years has been a good investment, yes or no?
I don't agree at all, and I don't agree with the way the war was carried out, which caused a lot of these casualties. I think we were wrongheaded from the beginning, and I do have a lot to say about it. The way we conducted the battle, the way we inhibited our soldiers under the Obama administration, and that was responsible for casualties because of the rules of engagement that Obama's administration set out. We have done a lot of things wrong, and we have not provided a good backup for our soldiers over there. So I would like to see us get out of there. I don't think we're going to end up changing anything. Mm-hmm. And I think Trump's strategy to appear to reach out to the Taliban to have a conversation, the one thing that they did immediately was to blow something up and kill an American soldier.
Right. Right, which is why he did it. It's why he pulled out the negotiations when that happened.
But the reason that they did it is because they wanted to have some leverage on him when they came to the Fox.
They played Trump wrong.
That's right. That's exactly what I was going to say. They did not count on Trump being Trump.
Well, that's exactly. They obviously didn't read the book, clearly. They, you know, so they don't have him figured out, more or less, obviously, which is a little strange, exactly. But I mean, I hear you. Did you say a moment ago you think we need to pull out of Afghanistan? Is that your final word?
Indeed, think we should pull out. I think every day we're there, we lose good, valuable people, and we need to be gone because we're not going to make anything change.
Interesting. All right, let's bring on Colonel Jim Warshak now and see if we can't counterpoint some of those thoughts here, because that's some pretty strong opinions there. Now, Colonel Jim Warshak is retired from United States Air Force. He's a career senior intelligence and special missions officer. Colonel Jim served as a deputy director for intelligence for U.S. Central Command and has worked on the White House National Security Council. He's involved in GOP politics and chairman of the Hillsborough County GOP as well. So, Jim, let's you hear some of the opening things. Let me come right at it with you now and ask you this. First of all, to plan these talks at Camp David in September, was this an honest question? I mean, was this a good move or was this a bad move?
I agree 100% with Ilana. She's exactly right, and I can justify that from my experience in Afghanistan. And I agree with the points. We lost it, and we lost a lot of Americans as a result of President Obama's policy on Afghanistan. That our policy and our effort changed dramatically under his presidency. And, you know, I can argue the previous, and I can argue where we're at now. From the standpoint of having the talks at Camp David, I think that was a strategically phenomenal decision for a number of reasons. One, Camp David has been used for numerous secret peace talks with various adversaries of the United States, worst of which was Yasser Arafat who was entertained there. The fact that we do it at Camp David and we do it during the week of our 18th anniversary of 9/11 really is not a factor. In fact, it probably give or would have given the edge a little bit to President Trump, being a bold decision. When you do these kind of negotiations, you always want to do them, if possible, at a certain point in time when you're trying to leverage your adversary on your turf. Well, you can't get any closer to your turf than Camp David.
Don't you think a lot of Americans would have been insulted by that? I mean, let's talk about that a moment here, because I'm hearing you, I'm hearing Delana, but if you are a mom who lost a son or a husband or a wife or family, and you've got the enemy in Camp David, don't you think they're kind of, they take that the wrong way, or am I...
Well, not that's correct. How you may look at it.
No, it's not how I look at it. I'm asking, that's how, no, don't take me wrong. No. Now, I know you're thinking I'm saying that. I'm not saying that. I'm asking how about those people?
You're presenting it that way from the sympathetic side of...
I don't know. I'm asking the question. Parents. I don't know.
Having been in the Pentagon on 9/11, I was there. I carried people out of the building. 7 weeks later, part of the effort going into Afghanistan, and then... did multiple tours in Afghanistan throughout the rest of my military career. I say no. I look at it from the strategic positioning. That said, would we get anything out of it? I don't believe so right yet. But it's one of these things you have to do. You have to show effort. You have to show resolve. And that's the key word, resolve. When you do these kind of negotiations with hardcore adversaries and enemies of America. So yes, Camp David was okay.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I want to bring in Arnetta Nockin at this moment as well. Arnetta is a producer, commentator here at America Out Loud, and a 30-year career working on Wall Street, and certainly a follower of everything political. You know, I applaud the president consistently because he is very unorthodox. He is not at all follows a script. There is no script for the Trump doctrine. It does not exist. That book is just being written in a live fashion, exactly. So if it had been pulled off, potentially, and on the anniversary around there, give or take a day or two, maybe it would have been a brilliant move, potentially. Of course, it fell apart at the end or whatever. He pulled the plug on it. Rightfully so, I would imagine. But it sounds like this is all an exercise in futility anyways, because if you listen to Colonel Warshak and you listen to Alana Friedman, we were never going to get anywhere with the Taliban anyways. The whole thing is a smoke and mirrors game. I mean, being in Afghanistan itself was all smoke and mirrors, thinking we're going to come to an agreement of smoke and mirrors. So putting them in Camp David is just part of the smoke and mirrors propaganda bullshit campaign. Arnetta, am I wrong?
Yeah, I think so. Yes, I do. I just let me say first what it in the fact that I grew up in my business life in the towers. I lost friends and business associates in towers. I had friends that made it out. Many did not. I celebrated my life milestones and windows of the world on the towers. So I was personally affected about 9/11.
Wow.
And yet I cheer, stand and applaud President Trump, because I think his decision to do this was brilliant. Strategically, I totally agree. I don't have a military background, but I know from my own personal experience, when you're negotiating, you want to look them in the face, and Trump in the eye.
Right.
That's what he does best. Look them in the eye and then talk to them. And you always want to do it on your turf. Also, it's probably the safest place that President Trump could have held this for his personal safety. But to me, even though it was canceled, it was a huge success because it wasn't leaked. Nobody knew about it.
That is interesting.
And the left is up in arms. They're saying the scariest thing out there is the fear of not knowing what we don't know to be worried about. And what is that? I mean, he pulled it off. Nobody knew about it. It didn't leak. And the other one is, what if there had been a miracle? What if President Trump was able to pull something off and get somewhere with the Taliban? What better way to announce it than on the 18th anniversary.
Yeah, interesting. I think the questions now become, what happens to Afghanistan? What happens? Does the president pull out completely? Do we leave X amount of troops there? Does the CIA have an increased presence? Is there more special operations moving forward? How do you abandon the territory we've just spent the bloodshed and the treasure on for the last 18 years? With the idea that we were going to keep them at bay so they couldn't reorganize, so these cockroaches couldn't reorganize in the desert. Now, none of that's really changed, as everybody applauds the president being brilliant for his moves. None of that has really changed. There's still cockroaches. There's still a desert. They will probably still reorganize. We still have a lot of dead people and a lot of maimed people and a lot of treasure spent. And where are we exactly? I think that's the question that a lot of Americans are asking, quite frankly. And it's a reasonable question. The thing that should escape nobody is the game of smoke and mirrors we're talking about right now. Nobody really expected an honest deal with the Taliban. People, that's dealing with Satan. I mean, come on. You think you're going to get an honest deal with Satan? I mean, really, though, nobody really wants to admit what I'm speaking about right now. But that's really what we're talking about here. But sometimes in this world of smoke and mirrors, we have to go through the politics of it. Whatever the politics may be, people, isn't that the way it works, huh?
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good taste in gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. Thing about this president you've got to love, he doesn't follow a script, which I think is fabulous. The fact that you never really know, and as Arnetta was saying moments ago, nobody even knew. This was kept a big surprise. None of us really knew what was happening, that this was behind. Well, let me ask Colonel, did you know this was happening, Jim, by chance?
Not specifically. There were some inklings that we knew from the U.S. envoy that there was something going on. And the first inference was after his ninth meeting with the Taliban about 2 weeks ago, he was being called back to the United States for consultation, and that tipped some of our hats off as to what that might be about, because that was an indicator that something was up, and pretty much that's all we knew. So you're both right, you're all right in that it was done in stealth. Everything said so far, I agree with. We don't know what could have come out of it, but I think it would have been positive regardless.
All right, Jim, you wrote a piece there just recently here about the White House plans expansion of CIA presence in Afghanistan, the strategic imperative that was most interesting. Talk about that briefly a moment here. You were talking about the future plans of what ideally do we want to do with Afghanistan now? And how does that relate to that article you wrote?
Here's the thing that we've learned over the years, pros and cons, when we leave a strategic locale in the world. We don't want to do something that allows it to become a safe haven once again, as we've seen. We saw this in Iraq. We've seen this in Yemen. We've seen this in a number of other Somalia.
Yeah, we've seen it everywhere.
So, while we've had a presence there for the last 18 years, much of the intelligence collection has been done by our special operations forces. They do what is called strategic reconnaissance, and they provide the necessary ground level security and go out and do the kinds of missions they do, and all of which is always to get intelligence.
All right, so Jim, what's the right number? What should we leave for Afghanistan that's going to help us moving forward? Because some people are calling for a complete 100% pullout, which is, you know, like you say, we never do. So what are the numbers? What do we leave? How many troops?
You know, right now in Iraq, we're looking at under 5,000. I would suspect that it would probably be less than that, but we're never going to openly say what that number is, because those military folks that remain are there to do a particular job, and we don't want to highlight their positions to certainly the Taliban, who, you know, as we said earlier in the show, have no inclination whatsoever to do anything other than stay there and rule Afghanistan.
Well, you bring up a very big point. It's one of the things I wanted to talk to you and all of you about, actually, was the president. I've seen many reports where he's being criticized right now for giving too much information out there. Again, we talk about the art of a deal, whatever that might be. Yeah. Well, not everyone is pleased with the fact that his rhetoric, as they're calling it, about wanting to end the war has been wise. As you just said, Jim, if the enemy knows you're doing whatever, in this case, going home, when he's been putting these reports out there that we're leaving, then you know, they would be compromised, or that they might strategically do something different. And so there was actually a senior commander, one of the former senior commanders in Afghanistan, said, and I quote, "I don't want to rule out the possibility there could be an acceptable agreement, but clearly the context of how the negotiations are being carried out is not the most desirable." So, in other words, there's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking, but there are a lot of people think that Trump is saying too much out there. Is he putting too much out there, Jim?
He's putting out what needs to be said. I can guarantee you he doesn't shoot from the hip. Many people believe he does, but he's putting it out there because he's being advised what to put out. Anything he, you know, the same thing with his tweets. All that is done strategically. He is not there. I mean, if you're halfway smart, you can sit there and watch his tweets and watch what he's doing at the same time. He's in a meeting with somebody, yet there's tweets following. He has a whole staff that strategically puts out information. Mm-hmm. And what he's putting out there is to send a message. The problem we're dealing with is the mainstream media, the neocons, the establishment, who want to keep us in perpetual war, the big military industrial complex people who feed off of the government. Mm-hmm. They know if a war is going on, they're going to be making billions of dollars in selling weapons systems and capabilities to the U.S. government to maintain that. And so, you know, Washington is driven and run by in a large percentage by those types. The last thing they want to do is us to roll out of there. It's well why said. You heard so much pushback in Syria. You heard the same thing in Iraq. Anywhere we're at militarily, you're going to get pushback about, you know, what's going to happen. And they're going to make up scenarios, and the narrative is going to be doom and gloom if we pull out. And that's what we're dealing with.
I think you would agree with me, which is why I would say this, that these people you're speaking about, the industrial military complex here and all of these cats here, they want to go back to the old way of doing business, Jim. I think you would agree with that, you know? In other words, President Trump has changed the way you do business from the Oval Office, and he's done it with the Twitter feed, and he's done it by telling people what he's going to do. But I think everybody can understand this is all very strategic in nature. Ilana, you agree with that? I'm assuming number one that you, whether you agree or don't agree with what the president puts out there, sometimes it's not even what he's thinking. He plays both sides of the conversation or both sides of the dialogue, which I totally understand because this is what I do myself on these programs. I play both sides of the conversation just to get a rise out of people. So I understand the theory. Ilana, is that a correct assessment?
I think so. I think sometimes he may shoot from the hip. He just sits at 4 o'clock in the morning and something gets his dander up and he just has to say something. But I think for the most part, his tweets are choreographed in a way that would support his strategy. Because underneath everything, he is a strategic guy. And even though he's a street fighter, his modus operandi is based on what's going to happen next and what his strategy has to be to make that outcome be what he wants it to
That's
be.
That's right. That's right. Alana, you said earlier that you're not pleased the way the thing has been played out and would change a lot of things from the beginning of this Afghanistan war, which is over 18 years ago. So I would say to you, I just asked Colonel Jim Warshak what would be the right numbers to leave and how do we do this. What is your take on that? Specific to the question of what's the force we leave there? Who do we leave and how many? How many troops?
I think what we should be doing is looking at what do we hope to accomplish by whatever we do. And I'm of the opinion that I don't think that we can accomplish very much there as much as we would like to.
So would you leave anybody?
My tendency would be to pull everybody out when the time comes. But that would be, you know, my gut reaction.
Has the
I don't
time
have
come?
Numbers. Well, it seems as though it has, but as I was about to say, I don't have the numbers. I don't have the strategic information that I would need to make a real analysis of that. But what I would say, as I said at the beginning, was it depends on what you want the outcome to be. If we are going to leave 5,000 troops in or personnel in Afghanistan, what is the purpose of that?
Let me answer you. And it's to do what the colonel just said, and I want the colonel to respond to this, and then we'll go to Arnetta here, but it's that we don't leave the vacuum there. So the whole concept of this is that you leave a but you know, I got thinking of that, Jim. And, you know, and I hear you and I hear that vacuum and I get it. But, you know, there's a part of me that says that conversation, too, is just a lot of BS. And let me tell you why I might say, let me play devil's advocate a moment with you, because that's an argument I started thinking about the other day. I know a lot of our experts believe that. I know you believe that. Don't create the vacuum. Got to leave the people there. Well, Alana says, screw that. Let's get everybody the hell out of there. We're done with this thing. What's the initiative? What's the game plan? Well, here's the thing, Jim. You got a whole continent of Africa, for heaven's sakes. You got all kinds of jihadists and Taliban and evil people going on there. There's a whole continent they can screw up. And there's other places on planet Earth. Obviously there's vacuums all over the place. So how are we going to do this? I mean, we're fighting a fight of evil that wants to wipe us out. When we talk about the Taliban, that's just one part of many evil forces out there. So, I mean, let's talk about that, Jim, a minute. I mean, what about all these other evil places around the world? They're vacuums too, aren't they? Do we put forces there?
Well, most of these places that we call vacuums or failed states are failed states because we had something to do with it. When you look at Somalia, when we look at Yemen, and it gives the rest of the world the opportunity to point the finger at us, mm-hmm. and gives our adversaries, even those within our country, to point the finger at Donald Trump and say, this is your fault. We live off of this notion of we annihilated Germany in World War II and we annihilated Japan in World War II, and they both came back resilient and, you know, relatively well stable and responsible actors in the world. And that's kind of what the template has always been.
Good point.
And so don't we want, you know, if you, you know, Alana talked about it. If you go back to Afghanistan in the 50s, 60s and early 70s, the place was very progressive. I don't mean politically. It was very progressive. It was coming along. Women dressed just like they do in that time frame in the United States. And there was progress going on. And the reason was they wanted to be like the West. This was going on in Iran, too.
Yeah, I remember
that. And the reason
that.
This happened was we created a capability called the 707 jetliner, and it was able to fly from U.S. and Europe to Asia, and commerce and trade took us a rise up because of that. But they had to stop off and refuel, and we built airfields in Kandahar and Kabul and Islamabad, Pakistan, and a few other cities in Iran. And that brought Western type ideas and ideals and style and everything there, and they saw it and they liked it. We didn't go in there to try to influence them to be like us. They saw it and they wanted to be that way. And then the Russians went into Afghanistan in 1975 and started the dismantlement and the destruction of the country. It really goes back to that far. We don't want to be the last one out and leave it that way. Not that we want to, nor should we go in there and rebuild it. Mm-hmm. Let them rebuild it, but let them rebuild it on an ideal of we want to participate and be responsible members of the world, not have it become a bastion of radical Islamic terrorism, which we have opened up most of North Africa now. And when I say we, because I have to point the finger at Obama, look what we did with Libya, and we did it in Tunisia, and we did it almost in Egypt, and we did it in Yemen, and I count that close because it's so close to the Horn of Africa. Mm-hmm. We allowed all that to happen. The last thing you want to do is be the person left with the blame and the finger pointing at you. And I think that's what we're looking at. Not that we want to keep forces there for other reasons. It's just it just gets to that. And I'm the first one to say, let's pull out everything, but you got to look at the consequences.
So, Arnetta, so let me ask you next year, what is your view on it in studying this yourself? Do you believe we could pull out of there completely 100%, as Alana suggested? Because a lot of let me say this honestly to you as well. A lot of Americans would absolutely stand and agree with Ilana's assessment. And a lot of people would stand and agree with that. But the colonel comes back and says, well, you know what? Yeah, that's just not going to work for this reason alone. Of course, then I bring up Africa and the rest of the vacuums in the world. So what would you do? What do you think?
Well, the big elephant in the room is the proximity to Israel. No one has mentioned that. Afghanistan, you know, it's a little harder to get from Africa to Israel to destroy them. So if that part of the world is not stable, we have to have some sort of stability, even if we can't trust the Taliban. And the other elephant in the room is Pakistan. I believe we have the opportunity to have a better relationship with Pakistan, who everyone knows that the camps for Al-Qaeda are in Pakistan, most of the larger ones. Mm-hmm. So there's that threat. We have to have Trump have another term, right, in order to even accomplish minute part of what needs to be done. Not right. Rebuild the nation, but just the threat of retaliation.
Yeah, well, you know, as you just said, and you put it out there, what came to my mind actually is, quite frankly, with this conversation we're having right now, if you do all the math real fast, there's a lot of elephants in the room, Arnetta, really, honestly. Uh-huh. I mean, there are a lot. This is a very, my point is this. This is a very complex problem. It's a complex situation. But, you know, again, it's so central to the fight on planet Earth here. And I like to step back sometimes and call it that, because really this is a fight on the planet. We're talking about a global fight here. It's a global fight. It's a global fight of good and evil. It's absolutely that. But it's a global fight of a lot of jihadists who want us dead. And you know, the other thing, interesting point, and we before we take a quick pause here, is you know, the colonel was right when he said that a lot of these people, they embrace our culture and our Western values. They seem to, and I remember that in Iran. I remember that in a lot of different markets. They tend to do that. But it's funny, they use them for their own purpose when it's desirable, but then they still want to kill us at the end of the day because of the ideology. And of course, you can dress it up, and you can, what do they say? You can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig, right? I guess that's what we got here, people. Maybe it's pigs and not elephants. I don't know.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
You know, the other way to look at it, too, is this, people, that anything worthwhile is going to have to be out of the box. Because anything inside the box, they've all figured out, and it's not going to work. So remember that. You got to get out of the box. That's the thing you got to admire about President Donald J. Trump, is he kind of lives outside of the box, doesn't have a box in his life. You got to appreciate that about the man. Now, I know a lot of people, and as Jim was pointing out just earlier, the military-industrial complex and all the neocons and all the nut jobs and what have you on both sides of the aisle, they go crazy with a guy like Trump. Because he's unpredictable in their world. Of course, in our world, we can kind of see better and clearer than they can, probably, I think. But whether you agree with me or not, I don't know. But listen, I want to talk. We've got, again, let me get back to this. John Bolton. Jim, was this a surprise? Did you expect the firing of John Bolton?
I never expected him to be around till the end of the president's first term. If you listen to and watched a lot of things he said, you understand what his political ideology is. One thing I always tell people, and I know this having served on the NSC staff, is the National Security Advisor's role and position there is to be a planner, an orchestrator, a coordinator, and a corroborator with the other agencies that make up the NSC, which is primarily the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of Energy, and Secretary of Treasury. Those are our major pillars of U.S. power. And his job is to choreograph the decisions of the other big players around the table. He doesn't have a vote on the what we call the Principals Council of the NSC. He's just the guy who makes sure the meetings are scheduled, the papers are prepared, and he kind of just, you know, he's the schoolmaster, but he's not the decision maker. And he may tell the president, I think this and I think that, but he really doesn't have a role in the real decision making.
No, but the president seeks his advice, right? The president seeks
He listens to him, but his advice is certainly his opinion. We all present
our
opinions.
Well, he fired him for that reason, Jim. He fired him because his advice sucks.
I agree. And this happens to lots of national security advisors.
Absolutely.
It's not the first time.
No.
This will be number four that the president is on. Mm-hmm. Didn't like his neoconish principles and ideas, and probably had enough of it. Yeah. But, you know, it remains to be seen the real reason. We'll probably hear about it in the coming days. Now, I've, through my sources, was told that the falling out happened in the earlier part of the week after the cancellation of the peace talks, so to speak. And he, you know, instituted his decision to quit. Well, Trump didn't want to have that play out. So Trump last night immediately, you know, called him in and says, OK, I want you to put your resignation in. And he agreed. And this morning he presented his formal resignation to the president, and he tweeted it out, I think, about 10 o'clock this morning that is what happened. You're never going to get the down and dirty part of it, because that's the way it is when people are fired or removed or quit or resign. You want to make it as seamless and as smooth as possible. And for a person like the National Security Advisor or Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense, it always comes, you know, as a resignation. We all hear about that.
Sure.
And I wanted to spend more time with my family and kids and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Bolton was hired. I have to say this. Bolton was hired because he knows the national security apparatus. He's been around for decades in Washington. He knows how things work. He was hired because he knows how DOD, how State Department, how the NSC, how all the players, he knows how that operates. He was hired to do that. And as I said, you need a person who knows their way around Washington and how to get things done. His opinions are the least valuable. Most people tend to look, well, the National Security Advisor is the guy with the last voice in the air. And that may be true because he works right down the hall from the president, whereas the Secretary of State and Defense are across town, but doesn't mean the president is going to listen to him and follow through. And I'm sure he's had a lot of arguments and debates with Bolton, and now was the time for this to happen.
There's no doubt, but again, he is an advisor, and he was advising the president, and the president didn't like his advice. That, to me, is where the rubber meets the road, and the president said, good, bye-bye, I don't like what you're
saying. Well, we saw that happen with Mattis a few weeks ago, or a few months ago, when he gave his advice to stay in Syria with more troops, and the president said, no, we're going to kick their ass and get the hell out of there. And
that's
He picked up his marbles and went home.
Well, and
just
that's
because the boss doesn't like your opinion, you have a choice.
Well, that's the prerogative
of a president.
Keep
doing it or quit.
And I would even say to you this, I think the fallout from John Bolton goes all the way back to North Korea. I think he's been on the president's nerves for some time, quite frankly. I'm surprised it lasted this long. Arnetta, what do you think? Do you think John Bolton was the right guy to get in there to begin with? Because I don't think it was.
For a very short term, he was the right guy. And, you know, the funny thing about it is these people like Bolton, they are the old school, the norms, the old way of doing business, the old opinions, everything. Well, Trump doesn't do that. I mean, the best quote I have seen against Trump is that he continues to desecrate the norms. And to me, Bolton was one of the norms and the neocons. And I think that's his biggest, President Trump's biggest badge of honor, is that he doesn't go by the norms. He's classically unpresidential, the things mm-hmm. that he does. And he's winning because of it.
Yeah, well said, well said. Ilana, John Bolton, was he the right man for the job? And are you surprised that he's finally gotten canned?
I do think he was the right man for the job at the time he was appointed. And I think that his advice to the president was something the president needed to hear. But President Trump knew who John Bolton was. We all knew who John Bolton was. He's a hawk, and he's a traditional hawk. So it's clear to me that, and I would agree with Jim, I'm astonished that he lasted as long as he did. But it seems as though the president is learning from his own experience and from the advice that he's getting from his advisors. As they keep changing, he keeps morphing into something that is more sophisticated, and his approach to international affairs is becoming very refined, not in his language, but in the way he conducts himself. And so this whole bit with the Taliban coming to Camp David and then destroying the trip by blowing something up, including one of our soldiers, this is an example of how the president has matured since he's come to the White House. And I take it as a very good sign. The stories about who resigned and who was fired, it depends who you talk to. John Bolton said he was ready to hand in his resignation on, I guess it was Monday night. And the president said, I fired him on Tuesday. So that's kind of crazy, and you don't know whom to believe, but it doesn't really matter. The bottom line is that John Bolton is now gone, and there will be a new national security advisor, and that's probably what the president needs. And it's not going to be another John Bolton. It's going to be something that's a reflection of the refinement of his own perspective of how he's doing his job. And I, for one, think he's doing a bang up job as president.
That is well said, Ilana. I wish everybody could hear the analysis mm-hmm. you just said about that, because it speaks volumes for what is really going on right now and who this president is, and the fact that the morphin part and taking in a little bit from all of it is interesting. In that perspective, with what you say there, then it was the right move then, if that's the case with John Bolton. There's a side of me that kind of says, I think the president needs to watch less television, because obviously he's seen John Bolton on all these programs and thought he was the cat's ass, you know? And he makes a lot of policies, Jim, you know that, about these television programs. As in fact, he tweets on the television programs. You can also see those tweets, Warshaw, when something happens and he tweets out about the television thing or some policy that was discussed on the television thing, not even saying that. I wonder what it would be. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because you're dealing with a lot of crazy media heads out there, but he watches a lot of television, is my guess, at the White House. Is that good or bad, Jim?
Well, he's in tune to probably 70% of Americans.
Does that mean you're in tune? Well, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Does that mean you're in tune because you listen to all the hack jobs?
He listens to it because he wants to hear what the American people are hearing so that he can go back and put his position on whatever it is he sees them saying. And he knows, you have to know your audience, and your audience is the American people. And most Americans watch a lot of TV and or watch it on the internet or whatever. And so he wants to hear what they're saying. If he sees there's lots of, and this was presented to me a long time ago, a lot of one of the highest rating shows in the morning is Fox and Friends. And a lot of women watch Fox and Friends because it's kind of family oriented and just the way it's covered. He watches it so that he can be, you know, focused on what they're hearing. So he knows, okay, this morning they heard about this, and this. And I'm sure he's not watching it for the 3 or 4 hours that it's on, but he has a sense of what the average American is hearing. He listens to CNN, he listens to MSNBC, because he wants to know what they're hearing. If he has no clue of what they're hearing, and he's just listening to his advisors, he's missing a lot. You have to remember, the man is a master of communications, master of manipulation, master of influence. And so he has to be able to be attuned to what is being said out there, what's being said about him. And I guarantee you he has a team of people who are watching this stuff, you know, all the time. And they're developing it into tweets for him to put out. My understanding is he has 45 people in his strategic communications office in the White House. So that's why he has been so effective in communicating to Americans.
Yeah, 45 people tweeting out. God, I could just use one. Al Jazeera comes out and says that there are two ways to end the war. They're speaking of this is what the Taliban told them. And the Taliban spokesman came out and said that Washington would regret turning its back on talks that are spearheaded by high-level officials from both sides. They say we have two ways to end the occupation in Afghanistan. One was jihad and fighting. The other was talks and negotiations. The Taliban says if Trump wants to stop the talks, we will take the first way and they will soon regret it, he says. Ilana, what do you say to that?
I don't think jihad ever stopped, and I don't think it's going to stop now. And even if there were talks, and even if they were successful from somebody's point of view, it's not going to stop the Taliban. It's not going to stop the Taliban from carrying out their jihad forever, because that's what they believe. That's their core belief, is jihad.
Yeah. Arnetta, the two ways to end the war, in the comments that were posted from Al Jazeera. You agree with that?
I find it very fascinating. So what they're saying is that we're killing your soldiers, and if you don't talk to us, we're going to continue killing your soldiers. And whatever agreement that we reach, if we don't like that agreement, we're going to continue killing your soldiers. So that whatever the agreement is, they're going to continue. That's what I get out of it. But then I also saw where President Trump said that they had killed over 1,000 Taliban in the last 10 days. So he's not taking their threat lightly, but he's not going to bow down to it.
Well, it's, you know, then there are those who say just put a bomb in the middle of the mountains and level it all. But in any event, that's a bit radical, obviously. Colonel Warshaw, last word.
Well, I was just going to mention that we heard when the Taliban conducted their attack, killing the American soldier, we retaliated, as was mentioned, with killing over 1,000. It was roughly about 1,100 Taliban, quickly and swiftly. We've never killed that many in such a short period of time. If you recall that the attack on Thursday and then the cancellation of the talks on last Saturday or Sunday, that was quick. That was to send a message to the Taliban that they understand. They understand killing, and when you took out 1,100 of theirs, they got the message. And of course, they responded through Al Jazeera, which is the best they could do, using Al Jazeera, a propaganda wing of radical Islamic terrorism, to put that message out. I believe Trump knows that. There'll be further talks, and those talks will gauge how serious the Taliban is, which I don't believe they will be, and there will be more attacks on the part of the Taliban, and if they can't find an American to kill, they're going to kill Afghans and hope that the Afghan government bends to their way of thinking. And so this is going to go on. It's jihad. It never ends. Until we get rid of the radical Islamic ideology, which is jihad, this is going to go on, and it doesn't matter if it's in Afghanistan or Iraq or Syria or Turkey or Israel or whatever. This is what they are all about.
It is what they're all about here. Absolutely. 100%. It's an absolute headbanger, people, when you think about what we've just talked about here. And there's so much to this conversation that you're hearing here with Colonel Jim Warshak, Ilana Friedman, and Arnetta Nocken. Big thank you. I mentioned smoke and mirrors earlier. It's a game of smoke and mirrors kind of thing. You hear Colonel Warshak there, and it's a fight of a lifetime, clearly. It's a fight for the planet. It's a globalist fight. The other thing is, it's always interesting to play Monday morning quarterback, isn't it? Now, you know, when you say, well, how would I have done that 18 years ago? You know, well, let me tell you what, 18 years ago, we were ripping pissed. They bought a couple of buildings down and murdered over 3,000 Americans. We were ripping pissed. And they were out for bin Laden and out for anybody else who gave a damn. That was the opening bell to this major fight of jihadists. Now, the fight of jihadists has been going on forever, but this was really the major fight, the major bell of it. And then, of course, you heard Colonel Lear talk about, well, the radical extremists. And then, you know, my buddy IQ would come out and say, they're all radical and extremists. What the hell are you talking about? It's the culture. Read the Quran, will you? So you see, it gets a little murky there, people. It gets a little muddy. That's all I'm saying to you, suggesting. The point of it is, we're in a fight of a lifetime here, man. I got to tell you. I don't think I ever really recognized as a young man how screwed up this planet really is and the people on it, how evil it all is. And then when you hear the kinds of stuff we're talking about now, and it's beyond comprehension sometimes, isn't it now, you know? But again, bringing the good fight to them is what we have to do. That's what our mandate is here. That's what we have to do as Americans here. We have to bring the fight to them. And so I support the president in that. I support the troops in Afghanistan. I absolutely believe we're going to have to leave a force there. I do believe that. And I think we're going to have forces in a whole lot of areas as well. Either that, or we're going to have to put up a big wall all around the United States and stop international jets from coming in. How the hell do you isolate yourself from a global world, right? Oh boy, problems ahead, people. It's time to get involved and get loud.